This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Cartus Gambit by Vasily Mahanyenko, translated by Natalia Nikitin, narrated by Jonathan Yen. Chapter 1. At the Fringe of the Empire. I boldly stepped into the portal and prepared myself for the long struggle with the governor. The 3 months I would be forced to spend entirely in his power were no cause for celebration, but I had no intention of surrendering, crawling on my knees or cowering like a kicked dog before this fumble of the developers. That sweaty toad can kiss my ass and forget about the orc warrior figurines for all his attempted bribery. Peace, love, or lots of dough. Potential use of physical force against me wasn't much of a worry. I was sure that the freed prisoners couldn't be casually punished or tortured. We did have rights, after all, even if these were somewhat curtailed. It was worth bearing in mind that the system was fully aware that the sensory filters were disconnected, so I had little to worry about, and... what on earth is this? To the player located in a prisoner capsule, you have earned respect with the Pryke Mine guards and are being transferred to the main game world. You have the option of taking part in the adaptation scenario, The Governor's Castle. Time to be spent at the location, The Governor's Castle, 2 months, 26 days. Role taken, Castle Craftsman. Conditions, 8-hour workday, a weekly salary, the results of the daily labor go to the Serest province. Every 7th day is a holiday, development of crafting professions up to level 30 inclusive, at the expense of the governor. Reward for taking part in the adaptation scenario, respect with the Serest province, 2 items of the rare class. Should you decline, you will be sent to a random settlement in the Malabar Empire, and your reputation with the Serest province will fall to the level of hatred. Do you wish to take part in the adaptation scenario, The Governor's Castle? Judging by the shimmering portal that surrounded me, I wasn't going to be taken anywhere until I made the choice. If that's the case, I had time to think about it, weighing up all the pros and cons. First, an adaptation scenario. How much more adaptation can I need? I get it already. I'm a loser and a wretch who only gets handed truckloads of compulsory adaptation instead of the standard game and normal communication with other players. That is definitely a minus. Second, there's the close proximity to the Govertoad, even if just geographically. I'm sorry, Mr. Digital NPC. Our encounter was a mistake, and mutual love is definitely not on the cards. You just wanted to use me. Right, my thoughts are getting in a mess again. In any case, the governor's personality amounts to 2 fat minuses. Third, I am a businesslike person and should think things through rationally. It would be foolish to simply walk past such a pile of freebies, the salary, the development of an unlimited number of professions, the character level being my only limit. I could be learning smithing, alchemy, enchantment, cartography, and level up in many other things at the same time, all justified by the conditions of the scenario. Definitely a double plus. Fourth, if I refuse, I'll get hatred with Serest. This is a clear minus, or rather a plus towards taking part in the scenario. There are just 40 provinces in Malabar, and to lose access to one of them is a very short-sighted choice. I think that's it. I don't know about anyone else in my place, but for me, the choice was clear. I didn't want to limit my freedom to 1 holiday a week. If that's the case, I'd say good luck to the Govertoad. He'd have to make do without me. I was all but crestfallen when I jumped into the portal with the flashing message that for 2 months and 26 days I'll be stuck in the governor's castle. Things turned out a lot less dire. The system simply provided advance information on the scenario, naively thinking that I would go for it. After all, it came with so many freebies and big bonuses. They can dream on. I confidently selected the refuse sign, small as it was, next to the larger accept, and in an instant the world was filled with color, sound, and the fragrant scent of a pine forest. To the player located in a prisoner capsule, you have declined to take part in the adaptation scenario and were sent to the settlement of Beatwick. Time to be spent at the settlement, 2 months, 26 days. Maximum time you can spend outside the settlement, 48 hours. If you are found outside the settlement beyond the allotted time, you will be teleported back into the village, and a record of violation of the parole conditions will be made. 3 violations annul your parole, and you will be returned to the mines to serve the remainder of your prison term. Have a pleasant game. Compulsory quest accepted. Visiting the village headman. Description: go to the headman of Beatwick to be allocated living quarters for the next 3 months. Deadline for completion, 12 hours. Penalty for failure, 3 violations. I made a few steps toward the village, visible in the distance, but was stopped by another message. Your reputation with the governor of the Sarist province has fallen by 22,000 points. Current level, hatred. You are 12,000 points away from the status of enmity. Due to receiving a maximum negative value, your bonus for daily reputation gain is invalid. So, they did land me with that after all. That's right, I knew what I was signing up for, the maximum value in negative reputation. Although, a negative reputation is a reputation nonetheless. In Barleona there are 4 levels of negative reputation: mistrust, dislike, enmity, and hatred. From neutral reputation to mistrust, there are -1,000 points, and to dislike, another 3,000. Then it's -6,000 until enmity, and 12,000 until hatred. I was given the maximum in one go. When I played my hunter, I managed to get exalted, the maximum positive reputation, with only 1 faction, and that only after playing for a couple of years, while now in just 3 months, I went straight to hatred. Yes, of course, a shaman knows no half measures. With reputation, it has to be the maximum. With crafted items, only legendary ones. And with girls, only those who get you locked up in prison. Just one thing was bad. Now Sarist was lost to me. As soon as I get spotted by the guards there, I'd be immediately sent to prison to assess the situation. Then it's spending a day in the preliminary detention cell, and then teleportation to the borders of the province. The next time I'd spend 2 days in the cell. After that it's 3, and so on, without a limit. The most unpleasant part was that a reputation like that is almost impossible to improve. You need the personal intervention of the Emperor. Visions of the lost, carefree life in the Govertoad's castle floated up on the fringes of my consciousness, but I quickly dispelled them and headed to Beatwick. At the first glance, it was a pretty standard average village. Judging by the chimneys, it had at least 70 households. The wooden houses, roofed with wooden shingles, the barking of dogs, happy shouts of children running around after a madly screeching cat that had something tied to its tail— all of this was a picture of normal village life, which I remembered from the times I had gone to visit my parents. The enormous stockade of thick logs around the entire perimeter protected the village from the dark forest that stood about 100 meters away. The strange expression, "forest of masts," involuntarily popped into my head. The trunk of the pines, as straight as spears, shot up into the sky, hiding the sun with their thick canopy and creating deep twilight beneath. Fallen pines, shrubbery, and hazel thicket, together with other kinds of trees, made the forest quite literally impassable. Only rare paths, probably hacked through by the locals, lead into the depths of this wonder of nature. Despite such surroundings, life was not restricted to the interior of the stockade. Up until the very edge of the forest, there rolled wide yellow fields of some kind of cereal crops, green meadows where cows and sheep grazed, and 100-meter-long vegetable patches that had villagers bent over them with their hoes. The village theme was played out to the full. Thick black smoke and the ringing blows of a hammer came from the smithy that stood near the road to the village. Great! There was a place here for leveling up. The only drawback for me was the red band on my head. Without it, Beatwick would have all but rolled out a red carpet for me as a free citizen of the Empire. Right now, though, I'd be lucky not to get dogs and pitchforks. I took a deep breath in the fresh air and headed at an unhurried pace toward the village gates, looking out for any special aspects of local life. My main task was to find the local headman and register my presence in the village. If I only knew where to look for him. This was no Prike Mine, where the orc always sat behind his desk. Here, the headman could be running around anywhere. As I made my way towards Beatwick, I tried to take note of every detail that could be of use in the next 3 months. I saw how the smith, large as a bear, came out of the smithy, lifted a small barrel of water, and, breathing out aloud, emptied it over himself, snorting and giving off a lot of steam. He stood there for a couple of seconds, giving me an unfriendly stare and loudly breathing in the cool air. Then he lifted the anvil from the ground as if it was a feather, shot me one more glance, and disappeared back into the smithy. With that, I felt my plans for leveling up in professions take a nosedive. I hate heat. For me, it's better not to work at all than be sweating buckets, my tongue hanging out as I gulp in the sizzling air. A group of three bearded men were actively swinging the scythes and giving me extremely unfriendly glances. Their small foreheads, menacing and, at the same time, unintelligent eyes, made them look very similar to Neanderthals, whose pictures I remembered from history lessons. They only lacked some animal skins on their backs, otherwise they'd be a spitting image of them. When I walked by them, I could hear muttering that didn't sound at all like Barleona's common tongue. I could bet that these three had some kind of a quest connected to them. Either they were the quest givers, or they would provide some kind of related information. If I asked the locals, it would probably turn out that these guys weren't from around here. An interesting-looking tree caught my eye.
"Watch out!"
The clear voice of a child tore me away from contemplating the local sights. I turned towards the source of the sound and opened my mouth to ask what happened, when my forehead was struck with something large, hard, and very painful. Bam! The peaceful county landscape was enriched by the image of a flying shaman, sending curses on anyone and everyone. My flight came to a stop almost immediately, inside a fresh haystack. With some effort, I dug my way out of the green entanglement, spitting out grass and brushing it off my coat. What the hell? I habitually looked at my hit points and cursed once again. 40% of my hit points were gone. What have I done to deserve this? The answer came soon enough, but left me somewhat perplexed. It was a huge cartwheel, tied around with a rope and framed with metal sheets. Right. Something like that could send you off for a respawn in no time.
"Are you all right?"
A small, out-of-breath boy, his face red, flew up to me, barely older than 7 by the look of it.
"I was... my tooth! The wheel! It's so heavy, and there you were, and it rolled the wrong way. Took my tooth with it, and then, bam, and you're flying. Into the grass, whack! Did it hurt?"
He was looking at me with such concern and guilt, trying to tidy up his messy ginger hair with fidgety hands, that I was totally unable to get angry at him.
"You won't tell Mum, will you? Our blacksmith is good at pulling teeth, but he's so busy all the time, so I have to do it myself."
The little boy started to explain, fitfully gulping in air between words and flashing the gap where his tooth used to be.
"Now I have no tooth, like Bald Bobby,"
the kid continued to chatter, and it dawned on me that the wheel that sent me flying was the local replacement for a dentist when the smith was too busy.
"You really won't tell Mum? Otherwise she won't let me out by myself again, only with my sister. And she's such a bore. That's not allowed. Don't touch that. Keep away from the dogs. Yuck! How can you be so boring? I remember how we went to the forest."
It seemed like part of this NPC's settings stated that if silence lasted for more than a minute, he'd immediately vanish from the face of Barleona. It didn't matter what the topic was or whether anyone was listening. He just had to keep talking. "Right, stop!" I interrupted his tale of venturing into the forest and gaining victory over the great vicious rabbit. "Do you know the village headman? If you take me to him, I won't say anything to your mum." I could use a guide at the start, and the boy must know each and every one in the village.
"The headman? Who doesn't know him? Everyone does. 5 coppers and I'll take you to him right away. He's always hiding, so you can hardly ever find him."
The kid was grinning and stretching his small hand towards me with an expectant look. "Here you go, you young extortionist." I threw 5 copper coins into his hand, and they immediately disappeared as if they had never existed. Of course, I could have made the boy take me to the headman for free, but 5 coppers weren't going to break the bank, and this way I might get some kind of a quest out of his parents, or a good hiding, if it turns out that one mustn't give the kid money under any circumstances. "What's your name, then?" I asked the young rascal, who was fussing around the fallen wheel and trying to decide which was the best side for getting to grips with it.
"I'm Clowder,"
the lad replied quickly, and started to redden from the effort of trying to lift the wheel. "Quit fibbing. There isn't a name like that. Let me help." I came up to him and put the wheel upright. It really was heavy. "Where will you roll it now?"
"I'm Clowder,"
said the little guy insistently, wiping his nose with his sleeve.
"I don't like Avtondil. I won't be called that. Everyone has good names, only I've got a stupid one. I always get a beating for it from the straighters. No need to roll it, just push it that way. It'll get there by itself."
Clowder pointed towards the village.
"With luck, it won't hit anyone this time."
"And who are these straighters?"
"They're from the neighboring Straight Street, Al Spatino's gang. Watch out!"
Clowder screamed after the rolling wheel and shouted to me,
"We'll meet down there!"
Clowder tripped up a couple of times, tumbling down the hill, but immediately got up and continued running after the wheel, shouting at the top of his voice. I chuckled at his goofiness and was about to follow him when I was suddenly turned around, lifted off the ground, and thrust into the enraged, bearded face of the blacksmith.
"Why are you bullying Clowder, you thug?"
Before I could answer anything, the blacksmith took a good swing and sent me flying again. It's not like I was expecting a royal welcome, but this was too much. These flights were beginning to wear me out with their frequency. I got up from the ground and quickly glanced at my hit points. Oh, boy, I only had 18% of life left. A blacksmith's punch hit much harder than the wheel. I saw that I might not survive a second blow and started to summon a healing spirit on myself.
"What's with the dancing? You're a warlock!"
It was just as well that the tambourine sped up the spirit summoning. I managed to completely heal myself only a second before my next flight. This was some blacksmith, strong as a bear. I tried to get up, but my feet gave way, and I slumped to the ground, seeing a semi-transparent message appear. Dizziness. You lost concentration for 10 seconds. Skill increase, plus 10% endurance. Total, 60%.
Stop, Mr. Slate!
Leave it, Clowder. Stay out of the way. Can't you see that we've had a killer warlock land on us?
He's no killer. He helped me to bring the wheel back to the village and wanted to see the headman.
The headman, you say?
Slate loomed over me, and then with one hand lifted me off the ground. No one would believe me if I told them that I got caught between a slate and a hard place in Barleona. Quite literally.
What did you want from the headman?
I'll be living here for 3 months, I croaked through a half-strangled throat.
Well, well. Playing as a shaman, I was beginning to discover Barleona from a completely different angle. I would never have thought that if you press on the throat, the player would start to croak like that. He won't be getting suffocated, just a status bar would pop up, stating that he didn't have enough air. But the rasping is not something I've noticed before. The blacksmith let go, and I fell on the ground like a sack of potatoes.
Going to live here, eh? Then why are you loitering here as if you're trying to snoop around? There's no head man around here.
Without waiting for my reply, the blacksmith turned around and went back to his smithy. By the looks of it, my first encounter with Beatwick residents was far from a success.
Don't be upset, fired off Clowder. Mr. Slade is nice. He just probably failed to make something today, and that made him all cranky. Let's go together. I'll finish rolling the wheel. See where it's crashed into the fence? It can stay there.
By the wooden gates, I found the local guards, two red-nosed men with puffy eyes. They were doing their best to stop themselves falling to the ground by propping themselves up against their spears. They clearly weren't doing so because they were tired or spent too long at their posts, but from uninhibited imbibing of spirits. The scent of syrupy homebrew wafted a few dozen meters away from the duo, and several bottles strewn across the ground were clear pointers to what the brave upholders of law and order were really up to. You couldn't say much for their overall appearance, either. A short chainmail that reached down to the middle of their beer bellies, sitting on top of a simple tunic, studded thick trousers, and worn bast shoes made the guard's appearance so terrifying that even if an enemy decided to invade the village, he was doomed to laugh himself to death first.
Halt! Who goes there?
I'm on my way to the village headman. I was sent to live here. I gave the simple reply. It looked like the local headman was someone well-respected, and referring to him might open doors.
The headman, eh?
The second guard started to mumble in a drunken voice.
Tell him that the gates are in safe hands. We're watching them like hawks. No enemy will get past us.
The guard straightened out, showing what a strong warrior was guarding the village. He was so overwhelmed with emotion that he lost his balance, took several steps backwards, hit the stockade with his back, and slid down, having lost his support from the spear.
"Hold it, Wilkins!"
The second guard hurried after him, totally forgetting about the unfairness of things like balance and the force of gravity. I shook my head in resignation at the sight of such guards and was about to head into the village, but then caught sight of the open gates, which had previously been hidden by the plump guardsmen. They were made of common wood, but one side had been scarred by the four-digit claw of some unknown monster. Moreover, this had been done from the side of the village, as if someone wanted to make an opening into the world outside. I wondered whether there was some quest connected to these gates. Was it to find and destroy the monster? In that case, I would be offering my services to the headman. "What happened to your gates?" I asked Clowder when we approached a large house located right in the center of the village.
"Nothing's wrong with our gates."
"But what about the marks that look like they were made by some claws?"
"That's a prank played by the Straters. Each night they sneak past the dozing guards and cut the gates with knives. Anyone getting caught gets dragged in front of the headman, and anyone who doesn't gets a ton of honor and respect. For example, I've never been caught yet."
"So how many times did you sneak to the gates?" I asked, disappointed, and just trying to keep the conversation going now. That could have been such a great quest.
"So far, zero times. But I didn't get caught either, right?"
The kid gave me a toothless smile and pointed towards a brightly painted house.
"We're here now. The headman's sitting inside, as usual."
He then took off so fast that all I saw were his flashing heels.
"And don't forget,"
Clowder shouted after running a good distance and turning around,
"not a word to Mum about the wheel."
"So, you've been sent to live with us?"
the headman asked me, as he carefully rolled up a paper and hid it in a drawer of his table. As soon as I set my eyes on him, it was clear. This was someone who liked order, a pedant, and, at the same time, an NPC who was very sure of himself. I couldn't say why, but his appearance really put me in the mind of one of the advisors of the Malabar Emperor. He had the same commanding face, framed by a short goatee and penetrating watchful eyes that took note of every detail. In general, he was a complete picture of one of Barleona's good officials. He was the complete opposite of the Govertoad, and it was no surprise that such a leader had the respect of the people in the village. "Yes, for almost 3 months."
"No need to stand. Take a seat. We have to decide what you'll be doing here."
The headman gestured me to an armchair and then leaned against the back of his own, looking at the ceiling, as if trying to think of how I could be of use to his village. I sat in a soft and rather comfortable armchair, which was clearly not of a local make. It was strange that the house of an ordinary NPC should have such furniture, headman or no. Reluctant to interrupt his thinking, I began to examine the village leader's office. It was a separate room in a residential house. An enormous wooden table, like that of the Pryke Mine governor, stood in the middle of the office and was a prime example of a well-ordered workspace. Everything was in folders and neat piles, with nothing out of place. He really was a pedant. A few modest-sized glass cabinets with books and scrolls, a fireplace, and a luxurious thick carpet were the other furnishings of the local leader's office. I was about to shift my gaze back to my host when it was caught by a relatively small painting. There was the headman, two grown men, an attractive young woman, and a smudge of paint that covered the fifth person in the picture.
"We have no inns, so we'll have to assign you to lodge with someone. I think Elizabeth wouldn't mind. Her house has been on the empty side for 2 years now."
The headman began to fill out a paper, which he then handed to me.
"Here, please relay my request to her. Furthermore, before I decide what type of work to appoint for you, I need to know what you can do and the level of your skills. I need exact numbers."
I opened my stats and began to read out my professions and their levels. It's just as well that he didn't demand that I should tell him all my stats. I was reluctant to reveal that I had crafting, even to an NPC.
"A jeweler, a miner, and a cook," said the headman thoughtfully. "Totally useless professions in our parts. We have no precious stones. You'd have to buy them in town, which is 2 days' travel away on a cart. Mining might have been useful, but we have only one vein, by the smithy, and it's worked by our blacksmith Slate every day. You're not advanced enough to work an iron vein in any case. You could, of course, travel to the Freelands. That's not far from here. You can get tin and marble veins there, but our forest is a dangerous one. Few would go there without decent protection. The cook profession doesn't even bear mentioning. Our Mrs. Potts can teach any cooks, even one of the governors, a thing or two. So, that's that.
Free lands nearby? Where the heck did I end up? Is this place really in the middle of nowhere? You don't happen to have a map of the Empire. It would be good to know where I was sent to serve my free settlement time, I asked the headman. He squinted, giving me a long, piercing look, and then replied,
"Yes, there is a map."
He cleared the table, took a scroll out of one of the drawers, and unfolded it. It was an enormous map of the Empire, about a meter by meter and a half. Where did he get such a wonder? Such a map costs around 10,000 gold.
"We're here,"
the headman pointed his finger at the very edge of the border with the Freelands. I bent over the map and quietly swore under my breath. Middle of nowhere would be putting it mildly. After the unification of all the countries took place and one language was adopted, the real world was split into 5 large regions along the continents: Eurasia, Africa, Australia, and the 2 Americas. In parallel with reality, 5 great continents were formed in Barleona, with each being divided roughly into 3 zones. For example, on our continent there was the Malabar Empire, Cartus, and the Freelands. Malabar was where the players lived. It contained the main resources, quests, factions, cities, including the capital, and also some yet unexplored lands. Thus, the area where I now found myself had not been completely mapped yet. Even on the headman's map, it was sketched out very roughly. Cartus, the Dark Empire, headed by the Nameless Dark Lord, was about 5 times smaller than Malabar in territory, which didn't stop it causing a great deal of trouble with its constant incursions and raids. But you had to give this empire its due. It abounded in unique objects and resources, which were often sought by high-level players. It is interesting to note that both a raid group of 100 players and a loner that secretly snuck into Cartus had equal chance of getting loot. It was impossible to play on the side of the Dark Empire, although many times the players signed petitions and held demonstrations asking to be permitted to play for the dark side of Barleona. The corporation kept promising to develop this feature, but, as far as I knew, nothing was ever done in this direction. Cartus remained the realm of the imitators. And finally, the 3rd zone on every continent, which took up almost 60% of all the areas accessible for play, the Freelands. Rare, independent towns with their own reputation rating, villages made up of 2-3 dozen houses, great forests, endless steppes, impassable bogs, and mountains that rose up to the sky. In the 15 years of Barleona's existence, only 30% of the Freelands' territory had been mapped, with the rest remaining a veiled mystery. Naturally, there were some enthusiasts who dropped everything and dedicated themselves to exploration and travel, but they either failed to produce maps of the explored areas, or chose not to share them with the rest. Or, which is most likely, they sold the maps for crazy money to the leading clans. For the majority of players, the territories of the Freelands remained uncharted. One could only guess what quests and achievements they contained, although the corporation representatives have repeatedly encouraged the players to stop battling Kartus and explore the free lands, saying that these held the best bonuses in the game. The developers even placed all the new dungeons, one opened every half a year, inside the still unexplored parts of the Freelands, to give players an incentive to spend their time on making their way there. But I digress. A lot. I had been sent for settlement to the farthest reach of the Empire, on the border with the Freelands, which here took the form of impassable woods, bogs, and mountains. There were no towns or villages. On the map, almost exactly by the spot labeled Beatwick, there were several icons indicating free mines in this area. I should go there and check them out. However, what really dampened my spirits was that the nearest imperial town, Farstead, was a really long way off. 2 days on a cart is not exactly next door, if I understood the scale of the map correctly. Considering that I cannot leave Beatwick for more than 2 days, a visit to Farstead was out of the question. "Had a good look now?" inquired the headman, and then rolled up the map and put it back in his table. "We may not be in the center of the Empire, but there's still plenty to do here." "Do you have any assignments for me?" I asked out of habit, knowing full well that the red band on my head wouldn't make me seem particularly trustworthy in the eyes of any NPC. I had to spend around a week in the village for its residents to get used to me and get less wary of my headband, and only then start seeking out any quests. But there's no harm in trying. "Of course there are, but I can't give them to just any stranger," replied the headman, confirming my thoughts. "First, live here for a while. Make some contribution to the village, and then there'll be assignments for you. Although, there is one. Recently, a pack of wolves has appeared in the woods. They've become bold and started raiding the herds. The shepherds said that they are led by an enormous wolf. If you do away with the wolf, we can see about other assignments. In any case, it is high time for that pack to be culled. It's no good for it to be roaming the woods in such numbers. But bear in mind, I won't take your word for it. I will need proof."
Quest available: The Hunt for the Grey Death. Description: a pack of wolves led by an enormous alpha wolf has appeared in the lands around Beatwick. Destroy 10 wolves and the great grey wolf. As proof that you've completed the assignment, bring back wolf tails, which have 100% drop rate from each mob. Quest type: common. Reward: +100 to reputation with the Krong province, +200 experience, +80 silver. Penalty for failing or refusing the quest: -100 to reputation with the Krong province.
"I'll take it. I'll go after the wolves tomorrow, first thing in the morning," I said as I accepted the quest. "But I have a few more questions. How many—"
"Wolves first, questions later."
The headman cut me off in a tone that indicated that the matter was closed.
"Now, Tisha will take you to Elizabeth, to whom you must remember to give the letter. Go on the hunt tomorrow, and after that we'll talk."
"Tisha!"
called the headman, and a couple of moments later the girl from the painting flew into the room.
"Let me introduce you. This is my daughter, Tilyasha. This is Mayan. He'll be living in our village for 3 months. Take him to Elizabeth. He can stay with her."
"Just call me Tisha."
The gentle voice of the girl was in tune with her beautiful appearance.
"Let's go. I'll show you the village."
She then moved gracefully to the door and gestured to me to follow her.
Quest: visiting the village headman completed.
It was a large village, From the side of the hill I counted around 70 houses, but in actual fact there were 103 households. Quite a lot, especially by frontier standards. The village followed a standard layout, the central square where the headman's house stood, and three streets, straight, crooked, and serpentine. The kids from these streets were always in the process of trying to establish who was the best and strongest, so fights were fairly frequent. Tisha also told me about the gates. A year ago, her father carved three claw marks into them in order to put some fear into the kids, who were really beginning to get out of hand, making it look like there was a werewolf in the village. But the plan somewhat backfired. Everyone was too scared to set foot outside their homes for a whole week. So he had to come clean about it. Then it became a tradition among the youngsters. If you wanted to prove yourself, you had to carve some claw marks into the gates. During the day, the gates were guarded by a couple of drunkards, who were no good for any other job, in any case. But at night, the more serious guards took their place. Either her brothers or hired hands, free citizens of the Empire, same as myself. The same in all, but the red bands, that is. I couldn't stop myself from asking if there were any free citizens in the village right now, and was very disappointed to hear the answer that the last such person came through the village half a year ago. Tisha's own story turned out to be quite interesting. She had come to the village together with her family just 2 years ago, immediately after the death of the previous headman, Elizabeth's husband. Before that, Tisha used to live in a large city. Her father held quite a high-ranking position because a carriage used to take him away early in the morning, and in the evening a large crowd of richly dressed people would gather at their house, lock themselves in the study, and hold long discussions. Then something happened, and her father gathered the household and came here to the edge of the Empire. "So the gates are guarded at night by your brothers? All three of them?" The thought of the painting with the smudge wouldn't leave me alone. Something was amiss here. From the time of my initiation, I had decided to put more trust in my instincts. Tisha's face darkened. She fell silent and walked for a while through the village without saying a word. She then regained control of herself and said in a serious voice, "No, not three, just two. But they only do it once a week. Never ask me about my third brother. I don't remember him myself, but we do not speak about him in the family. All I know is that he betrayed our kin and our homeland, and father banished him from the family forever. Not a word more about him. We're here. Elizabeth lives in this house." Tisha turned around and quickly vanished around the turn in the road. Oops. Looks like all my ambitious plans to seduce her have just been destroyed. Now I won't get anything other than a mere greeting out of her until I increase my reputation. A pity. But in general, she did share some very interesting information with me. Banishment from the family is a very serious act for an NPC. I can't imagine what had to have happened for a former high-ranking official to personally banish his own son. Once I level up my reputation to friendly, I will certainly ask the headman about the painting myself. I'd bet my life that the story behind the banishment is quite a complicated one and must have a quest attached to it. Assignments like these are exactly in Barleona's style— improving players' social skills by getting them to reconcile families.
"But you said you wouldn't tell Mum anything about the wheel."
An upset child's voice pulled me out of my thoughts.
"You promised."
"Firstly, I promised no such thing. And secondly, I have no intention of telling anyone anything. What are you doing here?" It took a little while for me to spot Clowder hiding under the porch.
"What do you mean? I live here, with my mum and my sister," replied the boy, crawling out of his hiding place.
"Then it's you that I've come to see. Is your mother home?
She's home, all right.
Clowder looked around, gave it a thought, and started to crawl back under the porch.
But I'm not going in there. It's porridge for dinner, and I hate it. If Mum sees me, she'll take me by my ear and sit me at the table. I'd best stay here for a while.
How can I help you?
A low woman's voice made me look up from Clowder's hiding place. Judging by the squeaking of the floorboards, the kid was trying to signal me that he wasn't there, and that I really had no idea where he might be. With a wise mother's smile, Elizabeth looked under her feet, and then asked a completely unexpected question.
"Excuse me, I wonder if you've seen a ginger boy around here? I've baked his favorite pie, but it will get cold soon and won't be as tasty. I'll have to give it all to Donnie, like the porridge." "You gave the porridge to Donnie? For real?"
After hitting his head a couple of times on the floorboards, Clowder ran like lightning from his hideout and stood before his mother, eyes shining.
"Is it a blueberry pie?"
"Of course it's the blueberry pie, just as you like it. Run along while it's still hot, you rascal."
Elizabeth ruffled his hair as the kid ran past her and then turned to me again.
"So, how can I help you?"
"I was sent to you by the headman. He said that I could come and live with you for 3 months. Here are the papers." I handed Elizabeth the letter. If her behavior with her son was so natural, I shouldn't have any major problems with this NPC.
3 months, eh?"
muttered Elizabeth, scanning through the paper. I couldn't help wondering what the headman wrote in there. I didn't manage to have a look in his house, and then was too busy talking to Tisha. What if it gave me a boost to intellect? You never know.
"The nights are warm at the moment, so I can give you the summer house. Is that all right with you?"
My landlady looked me over.
"Are you going to live here as a freeloader or as a help?"
Was there a quest in this for me? I may have to do it for free, but a quest is still a quest. "I don't like being a freeloader. If you need anything done, just tell me, and I'll do it, whether it's fetching the water, chopping wood, or digging the garden."
"No, my laborers can do all that well enough. The headman said that you aren't new to cooking."
Elizabeth paused, and I froze in expectation. A profession-based quest. It's a dream for any player. You can't even imagine the kind of bonuses you can get there. Elizabeth hesitated, but then appeared to come to a decision and said,
"I'm not a rich woman, so I can't feed another mouth. You will be completely responsible for feeding yourself."
She then glanced at my red headband and added,
"I also ask you not to come inside my house uninvited. Attention to the player. You have been denied access to the main house of Elizabeth, the widow of the former Beatwick headman. If you breach this restriction, one violation of your parole conditions will be recorded. Have a pleasant game."
Elizabeth turned around and went into the house, leaving me on the porch in a state of complete depression. I had already gotten all excited about getting quests and a friendly attitude to me. How could I have forgotten my red headband status? With that, any NPC will treat me warily and with suspicion. A former criminal, what do you expect? What if I start killing everyone, left and right, or pickpocketing and nicking their money? Who knows with these ex-cons? So it looks like earning levels wasn't going to be such a simple task after all. And I had all these plans to gain a dozen or two in the coming 3 months by doing various quests. A pity. I'll have to do something about that, that's certain. And as soon as possible, too. The summer house, kindly provided to me by Elizabeth, was astounding in its simplicity and Spartan feel. Its entire collection of furniture consisted of one bed, which took up half of the free space. That was it. There was the earthen floor, which remained cold even in today's heat, gray wooden planks for the wall, and narrow windows right by the ceiling, which had trouble letting even the moonlight through. Great place for spending the next 3 months. I threw myself on the bed and started to make plans just to keep my brain occupied. First, I'll have to do the quest with the wolves first thing tomorrow. Extra experience and reputation with the Krong province should help me win Elizabeth's trust and move into the big house. I had little desire to be stuck in this cage for 3 months. Second, I had to solve the problem of how to visit Farstead. Getting there on a cart wasn't an option. It would take too long. So I had to find another way. The headman said that a caravan travels to that town from time to time. I had to make an arrangement with its leader to buy a scroll of teleportation from Beatwick to Farstead. The return scroll I could buy there. Judging by the distance to the town, the scroll could cost around 800 or 900 gold. It's quite a lot, but I had to get to the Bank of Barleona and get my hands on the possessions of my former hunter character. There should be at least 11,000 there just in gold, not counting all the leftover equipment. Although all of it was focused on boosting agility, I could use even that. It would be like plate mail compared to what I had on now. Third, I had to find out about the mines that I'd seen marked on the headman's map. He did warn me, of course, that it's dangerous to go it alone there, but I really mustn't let an opportunity like this get away. If I understood correctly, the closest deposits of something or other are located a couple of hours' walk from Beatwick. I didn't really feel like sleeping, so if I left now, I'd be back by the morning. This will also give me a better idea about what I can count on in terms of leveling up professions. Fifth. Well, there is no fifth. I'm done planning. Now is the time for action, to go and look at that mine. But first I had to look through my bag, since I haven't really had time for that until now. After the dungeon, it was quite full of things I haven't even looked at. I threw the contents of the bag right on the floor, lit a rushlight, put it into a small hole in the wall, and began the inspection. There were the chess pieces. It was a pity that each orc warrior took up an entire slot in the bag. The thought of having to drag all 32 figurines around with me left me somewhat stumped. Where on earth will I get a bag that big? Then there were the 7 rings with a +3 stat bonus and 4 rings with a +2 bonus. They were the ones I failed to sell at the Pryke Mine and were now outdated. There was no point of keeping them for later for a potential sale at auction. Junk like this wouldn't even sell for 5 gold. I'll have to offload them with a normal NPC merchant. I didn't even look at the chainmail gloves dropped by the last boss of the dungeon. These belonged to the members of my future clan, and I had no intention to turn into a rat. Why expose myself to extra temptation? What if I liked them and didn't want to part with them? 23 pieces of malachite, 100 pieces of copper ore, and 68 copper ingots would all come in handy for leveling up my jewel craft until I solved my ore supply issues. There was my old friend, the mining pick, and finally there was the large pile of various skins, tails, meat, claws, and other junk, which had dropped from the rats and spiders of the dungeon. I fought off the impulse to gather it all up and sell it without even looking at it. The first completion of a dungeon gave quite a good chance to get a considerable bonus even from simple mobs, so I didn't want to throw away something potentially useful. As I sorted through it all, I set aside a spider eye, horrible in its look and feel. Its properties remained unidentified, and I did not have the wisdom stat which would help in this task. It's not like I needed it, in any case. It was much easier to go to mage NPCs in any town and identify the object for a couple of gold. I also set aside 22 rat tails with used by alchemists property and 12 spider mandibles with the used by armorers property. I would go around the relevant shops trying to sell these goods later. Just look at my thoughts running ahead. Go around to the shops. I haven't even sorted out the teleportation scroll, but I'm making all these plans for the town anyway. The rest turned out to be total trash, with only the rat meat being potentially useful for leveling up in cooking. After going through the items, I put them back in the bag, got a solid grip on my mallet, and went out into the night. The owners of Barleona know very well that many of the game's players only appear during late evenings. For this reason, the nights here are very light and generally have very good visibility. I took a couple of steps from the door and cursed. Just my luck. It looked like Beatwick was on that unique list of places where the rule about lighter nights did not apply. Pitch-black darkness covered the village like a blanket, and it was impossible to see anything even a couple of meters away. Thus, my plan to go to the mine fell through quite thoroughly. I had no desire whatsoever to trudge around in this dark. I sat on a bench, leaned against the wall, and closed my eyes. There was an almost complete silence that seemed to arrive in the village together with the dark, broken only by the rustle of the forest and the quiet chirping of crickets. There were no dog noises or shouts from crowds of NPCs, which were now peacefully sleeping in their houses. It was an ideal night to go out by yourself and breathe in the crisp, clean air, which contained hints of pine resin, fir needles, and a tangy whiff of an animal. An animal? I immediately opened my eyes and saw just a couple of meters away an indistinct cloud out of which two red eyes were staring at me. What the? I selected the indistinct cloud and tried to see in its properties what I was dealing with. Object properties hidden. Hidden? How's that? Concealing a mob's properties was impossible in Barleona, or at least it was until just now. The entire game is built upon the ability to read them, which allows the player to devise combat strategies with the mob or a boss. I had to get into the manual or on the forums to see who is able to hide their properties and whether this was even possible. But that's for later. Right now, I had other matters to deal with. What does this thing in front of me want? I had little doubt that its intentions were anything but nice and friendly. As a rule, in Barleona, if a mob is aggressive, it's sure to have red eyes. Neutral or friendly mobs would have eyes of any other color but red. The two red lamps looking straight at me did not make my immediate future look very promising. Trying not to make any sudden movements, I got up from the bench and started to shift sideways towards my door. I had to cover just a couple of meters. With every small step I took, the strange thing also shifted sideways, always keeping a meter and a half in front of my face. I don't think I'm liking this anymore. Maybe I should attack it first? Attack is the best defense, after all. I was about to summon a lightning spirit on this incomprehensible something, but then my hand slid against the doorknob. The thought of testing which of us was tougher was evaporated in a second. A door, despite its humble status, was a great obstacle against mobs. No one abolished the principle of, "My home is my castle," even in Barleona. I carefully slid my hand behind my back, slowly lowered the door handle, and quickly dropped inside the house. Immediately turning around, I tried to slam the door shut with my whole weight. Just as I was making my first move, the beast lunged forward and began to push hard on the closing door from the other side. Damage taken. Hit points reduced by 30. 260.
Door hit, minus 230, physical defense. Total hit points, 650 of 680. Skill increase, plus 10% endurance, total 70%. Plus 5% strength, total 60%.
I was just a couple of centimeters away from completely closing the door. I strained all I could, heaving my whole body against it, but the beast that was pushing on the other side just wouldn't let me do it.